Everybody, welcome to Matt Men, your source for all things professional wrestling. I'm Andrew Zarin. I'm joined by the archaeologist, Rich Stambolian.
What's up? I would be the lamest archaeologist. I wouldn't do anything cool at all.
You don't care about dinosaur bones? Old bones?
I love that. You know what? I love old bones. I love old bags of bones. I love dinosaurs. I love going to the Museum of Natural History any chance I get. It's one of the best places on Earth. But I'd be a terrible archaeologist. I can't read.
Yeah. You just like seeing it.
Can't read. Just like looking at it. Well, yeah. What is this, bone?
I'll tell you guys something. You want to know a little secret? Dinosaurs suck. They're just overrated birds.
Oh, get out of here.
They are. They're just giant birds. It's a myth. The whole dinosaur thing is a myth.
Are you
never existed.
When was the last time you went to the museum?
When did I go? About 2 years ago.
Are you a dinosaur denier?
No, I love dinosaurs. I am a dinosaur denier, though. I deny that they were these giant reptilians. They're birds.
You think they were just birds?
They were just giant birds, yeah.
Overrated. Imagine, because, 20 years from now, they'll look at the dinosaurs and they'll be like, well, we were wrong about them being lizards. We were wrong about them being birds. They were actually just monkeys.
The whole time. In disguise. Guys, this is a show all about professional wrestling. If this is your first time tuning in, we like to have fun with pro wrestling. We like to look at the positive, make fun of the negative. You're not going to see us yelling and ranting and screaming, except sometimes we do. But we like to keep this fun. We got a nice chat room going, a whole bunch of people. Bob Rowe, $5 in our chat on YouTube. He says, for Andrew's Botox treatment before 4K for Matt Men. I need my Botox done. $9.99, $5 if you want to fund us. Bob is on fire in these chats. He needs to become our writer.
I don't think he's joking. I think
he's very serious.
I think he's very serious about that. Are you going to get Botox for real? Is this one of your quarantine conversations that you've
been having?
I would
love to get Botox. I have no problem with it. Got a little Botox right beside my eyes. I got to keep this baby face going.
Botox in your butthole.
Butthole Botox. You got to keep it youthful. Guys, we do have a lot to talk about. Obviously, a lot went down last week in pro wrestling. A lot of layoffs in WWE. Some more. Chris Hero came out that he was furloughed or fired or laid off. I don't know exactly what the details
or whatever.
But he made an ominous message about his boots in the ring and he's maybe done. You know, he's a fascinating story. I mean, there's so much to talk about, but Chris Hero is one of those what ifs, right? This guy was an indie darling. He was part of that original indie. I don't know. Did they have a name like that group
indie
of
darlings?
Indie guys? But did they have a name? It was CM Punk, Chris Hero, Colt Cabana,
Claudio,
and Generico, Kevin Steen. You know, there was that weird little. I mean, some came a little after, but really, the CM Punk, Colt Cabana, and Chris Hero stuff was really big in the early 2000s.
There were like the early 2000s kings of the indies, right? Would that be fair?
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, what's fascinating? They're looking back at that era, right? I always talk about the first time I heard about CM Punk, and the first time I saw CM Punk, and it was daunting to me because I envisioned him as something totally different based on the hype. Because I had never seen him.
Okay.
I don't know how you felt, but I had read about CM Punk way before I had seen CM Punk. So you're going back into 2003, 2002. I mean, early CM Punk. And everybody's like, oh my God, this guy's CM Punk. He's the best. And then I finally saw him. And I saw him in probably pre-TNA. So he was still wearing the shorts.
Okay.
And I couldn't believe that was the guy that everybody was talking about. Obviously, he's very talented, and we kind of saw what he turned into. And there was a cult-like
personality.
Yeah, but it was more like you were drawn to him for not his appearance. You know what I mean? Like there were other guys that you look at, like Daniel Bryan. You saw him, you're like, oh my God, this guy's great.
I can wrestle.
Right? Nigel McGuinness, another one. You look at this guy and you're like, wow, this guy's really good. CM Punk didn't have that, but it was more of his character and his personality that drew people.
Mm-hmm.
But he was one of the first ones that I like kind of brought my attention to like the indies as much in that era. But what was yours like when you first saw CM or when you first heard about CM Punk? Do you remember when it was?
Absolutely. Yeah, this was like I want to say when he was Ring of Honor champ, and it's the same thing. Like we
did
like the internet
time?
Was. Yes, he did. The internet wasn't as fast as it is now, I guess. This is like that weird early 2000s period. And I remember
the summer
like
of punk stuff.
Just like you said, with like reading about him and not seeing him. And then I remember seeing him and honestly, this is my reaction. And I remember it. Ooh, thank God he's not one of those Jeff Hardy clones. Because at that time, the indies was full of Jeff Hardy.
It still is. It still is. Dude, look at the indies. It's way less now. I mean, when we first started the show, do you remember it was a constant joke for us that that's all it was. It was a creator wrestler from No Mercy. Yeah. There was an entire era. The Jeff Hardy clones was one thing. And then you had the goth guy, the very tall goth guy. So you had like a 6'3", 145-pound goth guy that his gimmick was a cross between The Undertaker and Jeff Hardy.
Right.
Very bizarre era of independent wrestling. And then you had Nick in our chat room, great list, right? CM Punk, Chris Hero, Rollins, Daniel Bryan, Cesaro, Eddie Edwards, that's another one. Davey Richards, another name you don't really hear. Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Cabana. That was the crew. And really, that kind of spun into really good independent wrestling. They're probably the reason why we have really strong indie wrestling now.
Homicide was in there too.
Homicide, yes. My boy, Homicide. Challenging Colby Carino for the Capital Wrestling World Championship. By the way, name change. I want to let everybody know.
Really?
Capital Wrestling now is Catalyst Wrestling. We have had a branding change. We have a lot of great stuff happening. We may be having a TV deal come up. Another one. A very strong
TV
deal. That I'm part of right now, putting together. We may have something big in Vegas going on when everything kind of goes back to normal. I have a lot that I want to say about this and the change, and I want to go over the story, but I'll wait till we kind of do it.
So you didn't change the name yet?
No, name is done. It's Catalyst Wrestling.
Okay, not Capital, Catalyst.
Catalyst, yeah.
Is it with a K or with a C?
A lot of Ks.
Just do it with a K.
All K's. K's and backwards Z's and Y's. It's spelled like it's the 90s. But I don't know. I kind of wanted to start it off with that independent conversation with you because you and I have really not discussed indie wrestling from that era too much.
No, not at all. I think because like WWE was like still kind of hot at the time, and also like TNA was just getting their legs underneath them, because I remember like going from like that era of indie wrestling to then following a guy like Samoa Joe, you know, and being like, oh, this guy's great. I wish he was in WWE, but he's in TNA and Kurt Angle's there. It's weird. You know what I mean?
Well, how about you look at independent wrestling from here's it. When you think independent wrestling, right? Like we, for the longest time for us, like you and me, our generation, it was really sad. Independent wrestling was really sad. This was post territories, right? So you had really low budget content being put out there, which barely any. You had really
neighborhood
low
guys.
Budget neighborhood guys mixed with the combination was new upcoming guys that were not trained properly. The old journeymen that were part of the territories that are now kind of starting their own promotions and. You know, you had like 50-year-old champions in every indie group. And then you had the former wrestlers, like Luke and Butch, the Bushwhackers, doing independent. It was
Gangrel.
Okay, great example. 1999. Think about independent wrestling. 1999, right? You're not thinking about the Daniel Bryans and CM Punks. You're thinking about Hacksaw Jim Duggan. You're thinking about Jimmy Snuka. You're thinking about the Bushwhackers. You're thinking names that really... They were past their prime, and that's all it was. That was the draw. Nobody was really going to see, you know, the young up and coming guy. You were going to get an autograph from Steve, you know, some guy.
I think the interesting thing about that era is, who made it out, right? Because I remember in New York, we had the New York Wrestling Connection. Have you ever been to any of their shows?
Yeah, and yeah, of course.
Yeah, like NYWC.
Right? Yeah, out in Long Island.
At Long Island, and a lot of guys got their start there, but I remember their big, and Mikey Whipwreck was, I think, was like the trainer and the booker.
I lost Rich.
Big guy.
Hold on, Rich.
Am I back?
Yeah, you're back. Start again. You said Mikey Whipwreck and you were gone.
So, like, NYWC, like, Mikey Whipwreck was, I think, like, the head trainer or the owner or whatever it was. But their big dude to come out of there was Livewire. You remember that guy?
Oh, my God. I do remember Livewire.
And Livewire went to the WWE, and he was, I want to say he was on Raw a couple of times, and then he went to Sunday Night Heat, and then I think he was on Velocity, and then he just was back in NYWC, you know?
What was his, what was his name? I don't remember him.
It was Livewire.
No, but what was, like, his actual name?
His WWE name? Or let's look that up.
I remember the name. I can't find him. But, you know, guys, that, like, by the way, Drew Gulak came out of there. Tony Nese came out of there. Kurt Hawkins came out of NYWC. He's still very involved with NYWC. When, you know, there was a tremendous amount of guys that came out of there. They were one of the first ones that really, they were putting on, you know, they were one of the first well-known academies, really, for wrestling. More than anything else.
So, like, the indies at that time also, besides the NYWC, like, I think we had, like, Ring of Honor was probably always the biggest indie in the early 2000s, right? They were the ones that were actually, like, they were doing it right, almost in, like, the spirit of, like, an ECW.
Yeah, 2002.
Kind of thing. As opposed to, like, the indies that you're talking about, where it's like a bunch of local dudes, and then maybe like Sabu will show up.
Rob Feinstein started Ring of Honor, just to remind everybody.
Okay.
In 2002.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, you had, like, burgeoning Ring of Honor. You had, like, those high school indies. I remember when I was in high school, my high school had, like, an indie wrestling event, and then the main eventers no-showed, and it was supposed to be Test, Gangrel, and somebody else.
Where?
Sabu?
Where? At Holy Cross?
Yeah, and they no-showed, and my buddy, I remember my buddy who was, like, super, super into wrestling, like, really, like, he would go to Philadelphia every weekend to go see ECW. The next day I was like, yeah, what happened? And he's like, nothing. They no-showed. And then I went to, like, North Shore Diner, and, like, Gangrel and Sabu were just hanging out, like, eating a burger.
That's hysterical.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's very interesting, to see how far the indies have come now, you know? And this is also, like, I think before we had access to, like, a PWG, right?
Yeah, I mean, listen, getting content like that was so rare.
And
you kind of think about how much great talent was actually out there, and they were never discovered because a lack of distribution. You know, really, your only distribution was you sent your tapes to WWE, and you were hoping that Jim Ross was in a good mood that day, or Bruce Prichard was in a good mood that day, and you stood out. You know, there's a ton of stories. Like, a great example, Conan, right? Conan has a great story where he calls the office to talk to Bruce, and he said, it's K-Dog on the phone, and Bruce had no freaking idea who K-Dog was and never called him back. Mm-hmm. Imagine if he did. He could have been WWE after WCW. You know, it's fascinating. Everything goes down to somebody being in the right mood or having a good day in order to look at your papers. And that's such a terrible way to kind of see your future happen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many stories there with these guys where they just never made it for whatever reason. Somebody didn't like them, or they sent the wrong tape, even.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. Very fascinating when you think about that stuff. Also, the big indie name that I always think of is Trent Acid.
Oh, yeah, Trent Acid, another one.
Right? Like, he was one of those Jeff Hardy guys, too. And
passed away.
It's just so bizarre, too, because also the indie guys, I feel like a lot of indie guys at that time were still doing the bad stuff that their generation the previous generation would do. I remember in college, like I did a lot of college radio in my college, and one day, well, I shouldn't say one day, but like we got a bunch of the younger NYWC wrestlers to come and like hang out and like do like a bunch of shows with us. And like these dudes were like, they were great, but they showed up with like 12 packs and like talked about like all the gimmicks they were doing, you know? And I was like, oh, it's crazy. And they were young dudes, you know, they were like, we were probably all the same age, like early 20s. And I'll never forget that, because I'm always like, oh, I guess like, cause they learned by example, you know, like if you're sitting in a locker room with like a veteran and this dude is popping pills left and right, you're probably gonna do the same thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know what it is? Yeah. It's also the glorification of that lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I was talking to, I don't want to mention who it was, but I was talking to a guy that was really deep in that, in those locker rooms. And he was saying, he's like, listen, mm-hmm. it was glorified. It was really like, if you were an up and coming guy and you saw a vet, you know, he was mm-hmm. popping the somas and he's drinking mm-hmm. a 12 pack and, you know, he's this grizzly vet. It was glorified. And you were like, wow, this guy's really cool. You know, in
this
a weird,
guy's got that, it together.
But you looked at it as, okay, you're 22 years mm-hmm. old. You're in this locker room with names. Names everywhere, right? Like you're in a locker room with these guys that you've idolized and this is what they're doing. Like, holy crap, like, this is what I got to do? And a lot
this
of these
what I
guys
do.
Were, but also, you know, it was a much rougher life, you know? It was, you didn't have, these guys were not family men. You know, you look at AJ Styles, this guy's almost a teetotaler.
Right.
You know, he's not, he's a carny guy. He's been in wrestling for almost 30 years.
Right.
You know, 20-something years this guy's been in the business, and it... There was obviously a transition from the guy, you know, I always think about that video of Bash at the Beach 88, where it's Hawk and Ann, but they're all messed up. They're all nuts. And then there's the other one from the 90s of who is it? Mountain Rock. Who was that guy? Shit.
Forgot. Man Mountain Rock.
Man Mountain Rock. Yeah. What was his actual name, though?
I don't know.
Someone in the chat room telling me, I forgot. But he has like they did a European tour. They did like a cruise and he's recording everybody. Kevin Nash is just digging into a bottle of pills and just dumping it in his mouth.
Those are Flintstones vitamins.
Flintstones vitamins, yeah. That's how he got so tall. That's the only reason.
I find
that so fast. And listen, we all are, right? We all like those shoot interviews to hear these stories. There's something about it that's so Wild West.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, from what I hear and what I've seen, that is not the locker rooms of today. These guys are, it's just not. I mean, I've been behind, I mean, with Capital Wrestling, for example. I'm in that locker room every time I'm at a show.
Trying to give everybody the gimmicks.
Bad out of all of them. But these guys are all really good, sweet people. You know, which mm-hmm. you don't see in pro wrestling.
It's true. Like, the business has come such a long way from, like, that, like, weird, untouchable, almost mafia-like thing to now where it's, like, very accessible, right?
Oh, very accessible. Listen, there were no schools. I always mm-hmm. find, you know what the ultimate kayfabe is? Guys that go into the business and they're like, I thought this was real.
Right.
That's, by the way, I just want to remind everybody, that is the biggest crock of crap. Anybody can tell you that when they didn't know until they were trained that wrestling was fake. That's the kayfabe of today. You want to keep
predetermined.
Kayfabe? Yeah, that's the kayfabe that everybody keeps up, mm-hmm. that they went into training and they thought it was real until their first match.
Right.
You know, maybe in 1970, but mm-hmm. nothing beyond, you know, that period, which we've watched.
You bring up a good point. Like, what's, because we live in, we talked about this a while ago, that we live in like wrestling 3.0 at this point, right? Where like the curtain is pulled back, but not to the extent that it's completely exposed. What's the next step of that?
Holograms.
Just full, like full exposure.
Yeah, you know
like
what?
Everybody
though?
Yeah,
you have a good point, right? What's the next step of kayfabe? I think kayfabe mm-hmm. is the audience now. They're the ones doing it, right? It's they've evolved, right? Before, the booker told you or the promoter told you, you got to keep kayfabe, and these wrestlers live the gimmick. Now, obviously, we know that the curtain is pulled back, and we know that these are characters. These aren't villainous human beings. Maybe some of them are, but, you know, in general, right. They're not. Nikita Koloff is not a Russian. You know, Ric Flair is Ric Flair. He lives a gimmick. But in reality,
Chief,
you know, the
Chief Jay Strongbow wasn't a Native American.
Yeah, he wasn't a Native American. You got to look at why... Was Chief Jay not Native American, or was Wahoo not?
He was
not
like
Native
American? He was an Italian guy. One of them.
Yeah. So this next step of kayfabe is really the wrestling new journalists spreading stories that WWE leaks to keep kayfabe.
Okay.
You know, great example that the rumor and the story of Brock Lesnar got into a huge fight with Vince McMahon. After he won the title at WrestleMania, and he threw the belt at Vince, and Vince said he called him an a-hole. That story was leaked by WWE to create buzz around the Brock Lesnar contract.
Okay.
You know, like, that's the next step, I think. It really comes down to social media and Twitter perpetuating the narrative that WWE kind of wants you to perpetuate. Obviously, there's a lot of blurred lines. The greatest kayfabe was CM Punk. WWE planted the story that CM Punk was returning at that Chicago show to throw everybody off and to discredit the wrestling journalists. But in reality, they were doing it to create a buzz, and you tuned in, and what do you see? Paul Heyman doing the wink and the nod at the camera and mentioning CM Punk that day.
Right, and also, like, that, I thought that was very interesting, too, because they just did the Ring of Honor angle in WWE. You know, like the Summer of Punk thing, they did it on a bigger scale.
No, but I'm going after that, right? And by the way, that's a great example. I didn't even think of that. That's that whole thing with contract signing and everything, that was done. Right. Even though, like, you watched it and I watched it, and we're like, oh, this is wrestling, right?
Mm-hmm.
There were so many fans that believed that he was leaving with the title,
right?
Because it was being reported that he hadn't signed it until that night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then WWE blew it. But I'm talking about when he left the company for good, and then the rumors were that Dave Meltzer had reported that he was going to be at the Chicago show, and that people from within WWE confirmed it with him that he was at that show.
So weird. So so you're saying, like, the next step of kayfabe is actually just going back to original kayfabe.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, I make it so bombastic that people believe it, you know, because, all right, so, like, we're out of that age group that still, quote unquote, like, believes it. But do you remember, like, when we were younger and the first time we tuned into ECW, I guarantee it was because somebody was like,
this is real.
It's real, you know, and then you'd watch it and be like, oh, these guys are killing each other. That is real. So, like, I think that was the draw.
My cousin in Florida went to a show at the Armory in Fort Lauderdale. And I believe he was at the Terry Funk. Somebody verify this because it's in my head now. It just popped up. The Terry Funk Sabu Bart wire match happened at, I think, the Armory in Fort Lauderdale. My cousin, that was a Marine at the time, had just come back home, and he went to that show. My cousin was a big wrestling fan, but, like, he was like a 70s, 80s wrestling fan, right? And he saw this, and he sent me a message. Not a message. What year could this have been? Actually, no, he sent me an email. It was 1997. It was AIM. He sent me a message on AIM, and he said, hey, are you still into wrestling? And I said, yeah, why? He goes, you have to see this. It's real. This is real wrestling. ECW is real. And this is like a 20-year-old man.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no, this
and
is
you,
real.
And you were what, like 13, 14 maybe?
Yeah. It was 1997. 13, 14 years old, yeah. And I obviously you couldn't find it. Very difficult to find that thing. So somehow I discovered it. I discovered ECW, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was gritty. It was dirty. Mm-hmm. Everybody was fucked up. Good. Mm-hmm. The heels, baby. Everybody was bad. And I was like, holy crap, this sucked me right in.
Mm-hmm. But you thought it was real.
I don't know if I thought it was real, but I would say I was more on the this is way more real than WWF than WCW. And
very fascinating.
What would sell it is, you know, they would do something fascinating. There was a Taz promo. It was one of the pay-per-views. I think it was Funk Sabu barbed wire match was held in ECW Arena. I'm almost positive there was one in Fort Lauderdale.
Mm-hmm.
Almost positive.
That was maybe at their Born to Be Florida pay-per-view.
Yeah. There was one at the Armory, because I remember he told me that he went to the Armory and he saw this guy Sabu and Terry Funk in a barbed wire match.
Regardless,
maybe,
I mean,
I'm wrong.
You know, that's how you got into it, you know.
That's how I got into it, and I got, you know, I'm still here. I'm sucked into this. You know, we're doing a kind of a different show here. I kind of like this. It's 1 a.m. MSG, Saturday mornings. There you go, baby. I kind of like doing these little different shows because sometimes, you know, we talk about the news and people want us to break news, but we really don't talk about what got us into wrestling as much.
Right, right.
And I always find that interesting as to what drew somebody into wrestling. You know, what was the moment? Like, what was it for you? Who was it for you that made you watch wrestling? Yeah,
Hogan.
But like, I'm talking about like family members, relatives. Was there a friend that was like, hey,
it. It was like turning the TV on Saturday morning and watching Superstars and then just like watching it with my dad and being like, yeah, this is great. And it's Hogan, you know, like you can't. I remember in school, like I would watch wrestling every Saturday because we didn't have cable. So it was just like Superstars on network, you know, but the kids who had cable and this is also shocking too, where it was like the kids who had cable and the kids whose parents let them order the events, they would always tell me.
Yeah. I remember you didn't have cable.
They'd always tell me like what happened, you know, and I would just like in my head, like a little wrestling journalist, just like writing shit down and remembering it, you know, like, oh, what happened with Hogan and Warrior? What happened with Hogan and The Undertaker? What about you?
For me, my dad was a wrestling fan. I think I've told the story. My grandfather used to work out with Bruno because my grandfather was a pro bodybuilder. So,
right.
And in Iran, my grandfather worked for the U.S. Embassy. So he used to go to a gym. There weren't a lot of gyms in Tehran. And one of the guys that would go there, his name was Takhti. And Takhti was the Iranian Greco-Roman, like he was their best wrestler. And had a little apprentice, like this shithead apprentice kid. And it was the Iron Sheik.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so like that's my weird connection. Mm-hmm. My father loved Bruno. My father loved wrestling. And then when I was, and then he was obviously in the 80s, he was a Hogan guy. How could you not be?
Mm-hmm. It's
you know,
tough
he's Americana. And I think for my father, like being an immigrant that came to the country in like 78, 79, like you want to live that American dream. And Hulk Hogan is Americana. This big, giant fucking hot dog man. Waving in a American flag and, you know, preaching the whole, like, you can do whatever you want, and this is America.
35 feet tall.
35 feet tall, like, blonde hot dog. I mean, unbelievable. My father freaking loved it, and he would sneak me out of bed early mornings, and we would watch X-Men on WPIX. Spider-Man and Friends, right? And then they had that Bizarro X-Men. They had, like, a two-part X-Men. So we watched that, we watched Transformers, we watched all that, and then we would watch wrestling. The other thing he would do is he would wake me up, because I used to go to bed early. I was a kid, he would wake me up to watch primetime wrestling on Mondays. So, and it was always the don't tell your mom story, you know, don't tell your mom, we're going to watch wrestling. That got me into it, and I was freaking hooked. Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior were just, it's a live cartoon.
Absolutely.
So when we look back, like the things that we find hokey now, we have to remember how hokey is Ultimate Warrior to a 40-year-old man. You know what I mean? For most people.
But also kayfabe, right?
Also kayfabe.
Because I think the kayfabe was a lot stronger then. And if you look at those old, like if you go on the WWE Network and check out like an old WrestleMania or like any old like SummerSlam or any of those events, you'll see the audience full of like adults and
Hold on, Rich.
Yeah.
Your very Greek wife just showed up here. I forgot to tell you. I made an order with her. She gave me a frap.
Ah, no wonder. No wonder I didn't get my morning frap.
I got a morning frap. By the way, this is a little plug for Jess. This is a Cheers by Jessica exclusive, surviving quarantine one sip at a time. You can buy it at cheersbyjessica.com. Oh my God. Your very Greek wife makes a phenomenal frap. I just got to tell you.
Oh, she does. Definitely. Yeah. So when you look back at those old videos of the shows, it's the audience is very adult, but also there's a lot of like crying adult women.
Tons
when,
of
when
crying
you think
adult
about
women.
It, you know, like
crying
tons
kids.
Of crying adult, crying kids, crying adult women, just like when like Warrior, like Hogan showed up, it was almost like watching like a New Japan show now where the audience is like, there's a lot of adults in the audience.
I have a question. When did you think it was always real? Like when you were a kid, like where did you spin off on that? This is real. This is not real. Cause I have a couple moments. My father made sure that I knew this wasn't real. So we don't kill ourselves like my cousins and I, because we would wrestle. I remember ordering Survivor Series at my house for Thanksgiving. I remember that was a thing because my cousins were into, my older cousins. But the moment that I thought, the first memory that I thought that, holy shit, this could be real, right? Or somebody's in danger, was the Royal Rumble with Ric Flair.
Okay.
That was a moment where I thought that man was dying. That old man. A 40-something years old, because, you know, we didn't know the age at that point. He looked like an old man. I honestly believed that this man was going to die in the ring, and it had to do everything with Bobby Heenan.
Okay.
I was at my uncle's house watching it on pay-per-view, and I was actually scared for Ric Flair that he was going to die in that ring.
Okay, So at that point in your head, you 100% believed it.
I knew that it wasn't real. I knew it because every chance my father had, he would tell me that it's fake. Look, they're not even hitting each other. They're not hitting each other. But for whatever reason, and I think it was my dad's reaction too to that Rumble, where he was like, there was a moment of concern that he saw. He's like, oh, maybe this guy's really hurt.
Right.
I think that was a moment for me where I was like, oh, maybe this is not fake. Maybe this is real.
I think the moment in my head when it clicked that this is impossible was The Undertaker.
The zombie taker.
Like 100%. Like 100%. It was Papa Shango and The Undertaker. And I'm like, this can't be real. You know, like in my little kid head being like, this is impossible. And then I remember also like, at that time, watching, I guess WCW or like the end of NWA, being like, this is too adult for me.
Really?
Like, this is actual wrestling. This is way too, like, I'm a kid. I don't want to watch men yell at each other
like
that
fat
aren't
men.
Dressed.
Yeah.
Right. That aren't dressed loudly. You know what I mean? Because it was like such a stark contrast, right? Between like Hogan, Savage, Undertaker, Ultimate Warrior versus Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, and Lex Luger. Right?
Oh yeah, so different, so different. Did you have a moment where you were afraid of a wrestler? Like, was there any wrestler as a kid that you would like? It would make you very uncomfortable.
Yokozuna.
Yokozuna made you uncomfortable. Why? Because he was in America. And he sat on people?
Because what, like when you're talking about like the realism kind of thing, like when he would do the bonsai drop, and then I remember one episode I think of Superstars, he bonsai dropped Hacksaw.
Oh, and he started bleeding from the mouth.
And he started bleeding from the mouth, and I was like, that's crazy. Why is this dude doing that? I think like Yoko, definitely.
Also, this question's for the chat also. Chat room, give us your answers too.
You know who also made me very uncomfortable?
Who?
Like I just said, when like we would tune into like WCW and like whenever it was on or whatever, Larry Zbyszko.
Really? Why?
Yeah, like Larry Zbyszko always, like when I was a kid, made me very uncomfortable. Does he look like your neighbor?
You look like your neighbor. I'll tell you mine. Jake Roberts made me very uncomfortable. Made me very uncomfortable. I didn't like him. And it had to do with a relative that looked like him, and he was very abusive with his kids.
Okay.
This guy was like, he would like ragdoll his kids, and he was like a really mean drunk. I remember being at this guy's house. It was like mother's cousin in Jersey. And every time we would go, by the end of like, it was like a family event or whatever, he would look just like Jake Roberts, had the hair, same ras from like smoking. And he was just like a mean, mean drunk, this guy.
He was a piece of shit drunk.
He was bad. And this guy would, he would make me so uncomfortable seeing Jake Roberts on there. And also Arn Anderson. Arn Anderson made me so uncomfortable. Abusive dads.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let me ask you something. All right. So, also this goes back to like being a kid. Did you think Sting was whack because his face paint wasn't as good?
Yeah, I always thought Sting was whack. I was not. Mm-hmm. I was not a big Stinger fan.
Right. Like Surfer Sting. Like I remember like watching Surfer Sting and being like, ah, this guy sucks. Like, why isn't he blonde and 35 feet tall?
Okay. Here's another one. Here's another one for you guys. Was there anybody that was on top of the business that you thought was whack as a kid?
Interesting.
Like, who was, like, a top guy, and you're like, why? I don't get him.
Was Greg Valentine ever top? I'll tell you who I didn't like when I was a kid.
No, don't. Greg Valentine. I love Greg the Hammer Valentine. He looked like a Cabbage Patch doll.
When you were a kid, you loved Greg the Hammer Valentine.
I love Greg Valentine. I love Coco Beware.
Absolutely.
So I had a weird list of like lower mid carders that I was really into. Greg Valentine was great. Jim the Anvil Neidhart I loved. Coco Beware loved. I was fascinated by Rick Martel. Don't know why.
Okay. Model.
The model. Liked him.
Yeah, that's because he planted the seeds for Enchanté.
Enchanté, I think that's what it was. And then Savio Vega later on. I fucking loved Savio Vega.
Really?
Don't know why, dude. I don't know why. I love Savio Vega. I loved Ahmed Johnson. I was a huge Ahmed Johnson fan. Probably Marty Jannetty was one of my favorites.
Really?
Yeah. I love Marty Jannetty. Didn't care for Sean early on as a kid. Love Marty. I was a big Scott Steiner fan. Steiner Brothers, Scott Steiner. Loved him. I'm trying to think who else I was really into. Rick Rude, I really liked.
Okay.
But he was on a higher end. But I had like bizarre mid-card or lower mid-card wrestlers that I was like really into. Probably Greg the Hammer Valentine was one of my favorites. I saw a match with him and Flair on Superstars. And I remember they would say it's the Battle of the Figure Fours. And I thought that was such a great match.
That's fascinating.
And it had to be 92.
What kind of weird kid were you that you loved Greg the Hammer
Dude,
Valentine?
Really weird kid. Really weird kid. Love Greg the Hammer.
I was not, like, I remember vividly not liking Greg Valentine, being really into the Rockers. Like, I loved the Rockers when I was a kid. And I'll admit it, not a fan of Polka Dot Dusty.
I never got Dusty Rhodes as a kid. I appreciate it much later.
Absolutely. Like, as an adult, 100% love Dusty. But as a kid, I think it was the vignettes that kind of ruined it for me because they were all gross.
Yeah. Oh, the Dusty. Right? The bathroom one.
Yeah.
Looks like someone's barbecuing in here. And they just show a shit stirred toilet.
This is like a truck stop toilet or something.
Yeah.
And I remember just being like, oh, so. Dusty, and then like that was an interesting era also for like tag teams, because I think you had the Hart Foundation, you had the Rockers, and you had the Killer Bees, right?
I have no memory of the Killer Bees, like as a kid. Like nothing.
Right. And then I shouldn't say they ruined it, but also like in typical like WWF fashion, when you have like a set group of tag teams and then you introduce like the Mega Powers, right?
Yeah. Here's another one for you. Virgil. Loved Virgil.
Really?
Loved the Million Dollar Man and loved Virgil too. I was a big Virgil fan. I had a weird, really bizarre liking for like mid-card talent, I guess. Not like below average mid-card talent.
He's just a big Virgil fan. Because you heard about that Pat Patterson rumor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Giant schlong.
I think I've told this on the show at least twice.
He ripped you off.
He ripped me off. Like I guess so. But did he really? I mean, like maybe he planted the seeds for this story. But when I was 19 or 20, I went to a Madison Square Garden convention with my buddy Alex, and we took a picture with Virgil, and then he said, "Now give me $20." And it was one of those like, sure, like, what?
Give me a kiss.
So we gave him the money, and then he signed. He let us keep my camera that I took the picture on. It was a disposable camera. And then he gave me a signed 8x10, personalized signed 8x10. And then
he called
that,
you Rick.
I think he signed it to Rick. I think after me, I was the only person that got something signed from him. And this is also like maybe 2000, 2001. And he followed us around the entire convention. And it wasn't like packed like near Comic-Con is now. It was just like a random, like weird convention. And they had a WWE show there that night, you know? And he would just like keep saying hi to us. And, you know, we'd get something to eat and he'd be there. And it was just like a very bizarre situation in which that like we still kind of talk about to this day, you know?
Yeah. I think it's all interesting. You know, I love these shows when we start talking about stuff like this rather than the news, really, because it really goes into the psyche of why everybody here, you know, the whole chat room, we're all fans of pro wrestling. You know, I think, if somebody were to say, who's the greatest WWE wrestler? I'm talking total package. Who would you say it is?
Of all time?
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels.
You say Shawn? See, I say The Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
He that is the greatest character ever made in pro wrestling and in the WWE. And the reason why I say this is because this guy, still to this day, the second you hear the gong, you stop.
Okay.
And it's such an absurd character to follow and to survive, you know, the transition of pro wrestling from different eras. I think that's where, for me, that's the moment I'm like, you know what, this guy's the greatest. Hogan's great. They're all great, but he's the greatest because of this. It's so absurd, and the mountain he had to climb to make this character work is impossible.
Mm.
It's a dong, by the way. It's a giant dong, not a gong.
So as far as like just overall presentation and package for you, it's Undertaker. Like
I would say it's Taker.
Which version? Yeah. Those are like all around all together.
All around. All of them. Every single one.
I'm Taker definitely, like Shawn Michaels for me, just because like Shawn Michaels was the best at making you hate him and also making you love him. I think that's a big thing. With Undertaker, it was always like, you can't help but love The Undertaker, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, how do you not?
Mm-hmm. But I think Sean...
Here's one for you. Here's a question for you. I know that you love Biker Taker, but which...
American Badass, baby.
I know, you're a big American Badass Taker fan. But the first time you saw Undertaker, what was your reaction?
I was like, oh, this guy looks cool. He looks like he came out of a Western.
He came out of a Western, yeah.
And I used to watch a lot, like, I still do, but, like, when I was a kid, like, my mom would love to watch Westerns, and I would just watch Westerns with my mom, and then when The Undertaker showed up, I was always like, oh, this guy looks like he came out of, like a spaghetti Western, you know? Yeah. And I think that was, like, always the appeal for me. And then later on, I think I liked, as much as I liked Ministry of Darkness Undertaker, I think they went as far, the writing was on the wall with that character, right?
Ministry of Darkness Taker?
Yeah, because you could only take that Undertaker so far.
Well, you know what it was? He evolved into that. And the evolution of Undertaker was fascinating because it was a slow evolution. It wasn't this like, okay, well, we're going to rebrand you. He was the cowboy, the dead cowboy. And he eventually turned into the teardrop Taker, you know? And that kind of led into, like, he was, like, almost like a vampire at one point. He was, like, a vampire Taker where he had the cape. And then he became the Ministry Taker, which was, like, a weirdo goth cult leader.
Right. He went. He basically became like Ozzy Osbourne at one point.
He became Ozzy Osbourne at one point. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like, very interesting. And then the Ministry of Darkness, like he went straight satanic. And then I think what was his thing after the Ministry? Like he did Taker. Corporate Ministry.
No, and then he became American Badass. He disappeared. He had a match with he got hurt, right? He was doing the Big Show thing where he tried to murder Big Show in the desert. And then he went off TV for a while. He was hurt. He tore his pec. He did this, and then came back as Biker Taker.
That was what, Judgment Day 2001?
Judgment Day 2001. Yeah.
Right? Am I right about that?
No. 2000?
Okay. Where he showed up like straight up on the bike.
We showed up on the bike. Let me see.
And then he chokeslammed. I think he chokeslammed the shit out of Shane, right?
Debut of the American Badass Taker. Let me see what. I think you are right. It was Judgment Day, right?
Yeah, it was Judgment Day. I forgot what year. And I remember, like, he came out with the bike, and I remember watching it at my buddy's house and thinking, there are so many things that could go wrong right now.
Was it, or did it say Judgment Day is now? I think that
it was Judgment Day 2000.
2000. Okay, got it.
Yeah. Right. So, like, and he came out to the ring with the bike, and I remember being like, yo, this is dangerous right now.
I was so mad. I hated it.
Why? Why?
Hated Biker Taker at the time. I mean, I appreciate it, right? But I think I thought, for me, I was like, why? This guy's so awesome as a spooky guy. Love Dead Man Taker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he missed WrestleMania 16. That's what it was.
Okay.
He has another question for you. Lex Luger. Let's go into Lex Luger.
Okay. Not a fan. Never a fan.
Not a fan. I truly believe he should have had the WWE title at that SummerSlam.
Absolutely. I think if they pulled the trigger after Hogan left, that would have been great, but never, like, I remember, like, he pretty much went straight from being the narcissist in WWF to like the new American hero and slamming Yoko on the Intrepid, which was awesome. And then just like, I don't know, there was just always something about him that never did it for me.
The metal plate in his forearm.
Yeah, that was during the narcissist stuff, right?
Even after, and then he was banned from using the forearm. That they did that whole thing where he hit Yoko with it and he got DQ'd. I really thought Luger would have been, you know, these what if moments are great. I don't know. Do you want to go into, we could get back to this, but do you want to go into any current wrestling or do you want to just continue with this?
I mean, AEW was great this week.
You know what?
SmackDown were okay.
I want to get your opinion of AEW because it was interesting. I watched certain clips of it, but I want you to kind of break that down for us. And then what we'll do, I want to get back into what made us like wrestling after AEW because I thought it was an interesting show and I liked it. I want to do a lot of the current wrestling at the Q&A segment at the end.
Okay.
Let's do that. Go ahead.
They're doing the they're still continuing with that TNT championship tournament. So you had Darby versus Sammy. Great match.
Very good match.
I think they're doing such good stuff with what they have, and we've been saying that every week. I like the Matt Hardy pre-tape promo, especially that he transformed from broken Matt Hardy into like regular Matt Hardy, which I think was kind of neat. And I do think this guy's gonna bust out like a third persona, almost like a Mick Foley.
Oh my god. Well, he has plenty. He has Matt Hardy version 2 or whatever the hell it is.
He on the promo, if you remember, he said, "I'm going to leave it up to the unkillable Matt Hardy." So I guess that's his or whatever thing he's calling himself.
He has a piece of trivia for you. What was Matt Hardy's gimmick when he was fired from the company? And he would do those promos, those like video clips that he would put out.
Oh, this is the Pastafarian.
The Pastafarian, great one. Anything? Any other suggestions?
I forgot what it was.
The Angelic Diablo. He would cut those wacko black and white promos.
And he did. This is like before he went to TNA, right?
No, this is way before. This is when he was hurt. And then the whole, like, the whole Lita thing was happening.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, you also had Kenny Omega versus Alan Angels. Fine.
Okay.
Orange Just Cassidy whatever. Versus Jimmy Havoc. Fine. Wardlow. Great. Which I think was kind of cool. Like, the like if you keep giving him, like squash matches, that's kind of neat, right?
Yeah, they're in a weird position right now because they obviously they've slowed down the momentum so much. And, you know, I think if this didn't happen, the whole pandemic, they would have been hitting a million viewers a week. I they were on the verge of that. They were on such a hot track for viewership and the product. By the way, their viewership is through the freaking roof on DVR. I think a lot of people don't realize that. Before this whole thing happened, their viewership, that 900,000 or 800,000, was closer to 1.5, 1.6 million because of the DVR numbers. And a lot of people don't look at that. You know, DVR and the following week, they are getting a tremendous amount. I don't know the numbers for Raw. I feel like more people are DVRing Raw than ever before. I would still say, you know, their number was what, under 2 million this week or whatever it was. I still think it's much higher than those ratings because people watch it afterwards. Like me, I watched Raw 3 days out after the fact.
Okay.
So my viewership doesn't really count because it's after the third day.
Okay.
So,
and you didn't DVR it. You did it on Hulu.
I did it on Hulu. Yeah. I watched the Hulu version. So for me, that number's gone. It doesn't even matter anymore. When you talk about live numbers, but we're going to have to look at a new way to calculate this because these numbers are not very accurate. AEW's numbers are much higher than the 700,000 because of, you know, just DVR numbers. The other thing, they're going live again in May.
Right.
In a couple of weeks, they're going to be live in Jacksonville again. So I think once they loosen the capacity for events, you know, why can't we have 100 people around the ring?
Okay.
You know what I mean?
See, that's very interesting, yeah.
I think they could do the Performance Center, and they'll make those Raws look great at the Performance Center. That, didn't they do that NXT at the Performance Center in front of a live audience?
Yes.
One of those, right?
Like, from like a month ago, I want to say yes.
But yeah, right before.
I want to say it was like a limited live audience.
It was a limit, but there was still an audience there. There was still people in the crowd.
Okay. Is it? Do you think it's appropriate for WWE to be taking these kinds of, like, quote unquote risks at this point?
It depends. I was asked this the other day by somebody, and I really don't know how to answer it. I have enough confidence in the wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
To say, listen, I don't want to put my life at risk by I don't want to put my health at risk, because we know that this isn't a life or, I mean, for some people, obviously, but for most people, most healthy individuals, they're just going to get sick. But I have enough confidence in them to make that determination for them. I have asked people within WWE, and I've asked talent in WWE, and the overall, I think there are more people that want to work than less.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I think this concept of none of them want to be there and all of them fear for their lives, that's not true. I think more of the talent wants to be there and wants to keep the shows going and they want to have some sort of normalcy than to sit at home. I think this is what it is for them. People have the option. AEW is giving people an option. AEW is not getting criticized as much as WWE, and AEW is forcing their talent to work. Mm-hmm. Or not forcing, but they have talent working. They've done a better job at PR-wise at letting you know that, no, nobody's getting punished. You could go home. If you don't feel comfortable working, you don't have to work. But
right.
All these guys are still working. They're still there. The top guys are all there.
It's a very interesting situation that we're in too. And also, like, I feel like at this point, it seems like we're hitting that apex where stuff might start kind of getting back to normal. I know Georgia is letting people they're starting to ease the restrictions, and I know a lot of AEW stuff is shot in Georgia too. So like, I guess it's both. It's the same, you know. Like you kind of want to hate WWE just because it's like the big corporate machine,
yeah.
You know. But like you said, it seems like people are just doing it of their own free will, as opposed to being like held hostage to being you have to wrestle, you know.
Listen, I want to get out. I want this to end. As fast right. as anybody else. I want to be back at work. I want to be back to normalcy. The reality is it's not going to be normal. We're not going to be doing 20,000 people buildings. It's not going to be that. Even if they open up and they say, guys, here we go. Doors are open. I think people are going to be a little bit more conscious and not want to attend events like this, which is great. That's kind of what you want. You want people to not go out and go nuts as soon as the doors open. With that said, you know, it's mid-April. Is it Georgia opening up right now? I mean, listen, I don't want to go into the political aspect of this, obviously.
But right.
Do you need to open up today? Could you say, like, okay, guys, two more weeks, and then we're going to do it? I think you could. I think you could have done that.
Right,
but
right.
Listen, if people want to go, we also have to remember, you are in control of your life. You can make the determination if you want to go out, if you want to wear a mask, if you want to take this a little bit more seriously than others. I kind of fall in line with that, where I have confidence in people that they are going to do the best that they can not to get sick.
I have zero confidence in that.
You know what? I have to tell you, people have done a great job. I've seen people, listen, obviously everybody's seen people that haven't, but from the people that I know, they've been really good with this stuff.
Yeah.
They've been very good.
Whenever I go out to do like grocery shopping or something, like just to get like odds and ends for the house or whatever, I see an insane number of people just no mask, no gloves, and also like complaining about why they have to wear a mask and gloves. I think it's a little dumb. And we're getting off topic here with the wrestling, but like,
listen, the hope is, the reality is, like in New York right now, Cuomo's on right now when we're recording this. there's an estimate of 23,000. 23% of New Yorkers are infected. I would say that number is probably closer to 30, and I think that's a great thing.
You're a scientist.
I'm a scientist, and I think that's a great thing. This is not gonna end once the doors open. This virus is not gonna disappear magically. I think people need to forget about that. I think the key here is to have as many healthy people infected now, and have as little unhealthy people infected now. So when you do open up, it's not affecting society of new infections and more people dying. According to Cuomo, 0.5% mortality rate with the estimates. And that's a really good sign. It's not 3%. It's, you know.
Do you kiss Andrew Cuomo whenever he does a briefing on your
I do. I actually pause it and I just start licking his face.
Wow.
And his nipple rings.
Now give me a kiss.
Yeah. Give me a kiss. All right, let's get back to wrestling. We were talking about AEW. I thought it was fine. NXT was fine. Guys, get ready with your questions. We want to do questions now. So submit your questions in the chat room. I'm going to talk about Velveteen Dream a little bit. Major controversy over Velveteen Dream. That was a bizarre message he put out there a couple nights ago that he was opening up DMs. Right?
Yeah.
He opened up DMs and... I don't know what to think here, right? I don't know what to think because the original post about the message he had sent out was a little weird, where it was like a 17-year-old and he posted on Reddit, or I believe he posted on Reddit that he didn't know what to do, and he sent them these videos and these images. And he wants to go to the police. He's thinking about going to the police. Just a bizarre reaction.
Right.
Like, not saying that that's not the reaction he should have had, but the whole thing was bizarre. Like, why? You're on top of the freaking world. You're like, and you publicly said, let's open up DMs, and now you're allegedly soliciting underage, you know, teenagers with inappropriate photos of you. And a ding dong photo. By the way, my God, this guy is, you talk about Virgil. This guy is like Ridiculous.
That's the only reason. The only reason you wanted to talk about this.
The big difference between Velveteen and Enchanté is that Enchanté is hung like a grapefruit. Just one giant. That's it. It's just a grapefruit in there.
Just a grapefruit.
Yeah.
Go see a doctor.
I don't know. I'm more. So he put out a message saying that he never solicited underage people. The photo is of him that somebody got somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And sent it to, I guess, started a conversation and sent it. I don't know what to believe. I have confidence in WWE that if they possibly have somebody that is soliciting underage people, I would anticipate that he would be terminated immediately. Right. They don't play around with that. That's one thing that WWE does really well right now, and it's if there is a situation like this, they will deal with it immediately.
Right. So it's just weird across the board because if it's true, that kind of makes him the dumbest person on the planet. Right?
Really, the dumbest person. And then the other thing is maybe you know, who knows? I mean, the only what excuses can you possibly have for that kind of behavior other than you being some sort of bizarro sexual deviant that is contacting underage kids. Which is disgusting, or he was, you know, on something and he had no idea what he was doing. I'm not saying that that's the excuse I'm giving him, but I'm just coming up with scenarios.
Right.
I can't imagine that this guy, being in the position he's in, would do that. What?
You can't imagine him being the dumbest person on the planet.
I cannot imagine him being the dumbest person on the planet. By the way, you know, Enzo... much less liked than him, was immediately he was terminated. There was an investigation, and turns out he didn't do what was being accused of him.
Exactly.
You know, so I don't know if he did do this. He's done. It's over. I mean, there's no turning back. I want to let things play out. I have no idea. Nor do I have an invested interest in him. But, you know, I don't have a bias in this. So I don't know what to think. I really don't. I think it's the way that it wasn't done secretively. Like, he publicly put out a message saying DMs are open, message me. And then he possibly solicited an underage kid. That's such a bizarre thing. Now, they're saying, well, there's audio proof. There's an audio recording. I don't know, man. You know, you don't know what that means.
You think it's did they release the audio thing? Because I imagine it, like, if this is like a prank or something, it's him just going, hey, this is the Velveteen Dream. Do you want to see my dick?
No, the audio, the audio asks, what school do you go to?
Oh, jeez.
Kind of sounds like him. I don't know.
So
but
weird.
The messages are weird. Like, one message is like, you want to chill? And then the kid goes, I would love to. It would be amazing. And he writes, you're the definition of adorable. The kid goes, you really think so? He goes, yes, I want to hear your voice.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
whatever.
Oh boy. I don't know.
Wrestling.
Listen, man, you got to be a little whacked out to be in this business. So, I'm gonna go with the. I'm gonna hold my thoughts, but I'm leaning towards, due to the circumstances, I really hope it's not real.
It's just weird.
It's just weird.
But then again,
I don't know. There's a lot of things pointing in the direction that it may not be real.
I think we've talked about this for longer than we had to.
Yeah. But the ding dong is definitely real.
The ding dong is there, baby.
Oh,
you want to do some questions?
Let's do some questions. All right, guys. Submit your questions in the chat room. Rich is going to read them because I don't know how to read.
All right. I'm glad you finally admit that. What was the most surprising release to you, and what is the most surprising non-release to you? Rowan for me. And
that is a surprising release. Yeah,
Rowan and Rusev are the two surprising ones for me.
Rusev was on the verge of leaving. Okay. I don't think they cut him because they were cutting. I think they cut him because he didn't want to be there anymore.
Okay.
A couple of weeks ago we spoke about, right before this happened, right before the whole thing, that he went home. That Russo was pissed off over something with merch sales, and he's like, fuck this. And he went home. I would say Kurt Angle is probably the most surprising to me.
Okay.
I would say Kurt Angle. Rusev, definitely big name on there. Definitely Rowan. I think Rowan as well, because they were starting to push him. I don't know. Anybody? There's a lot of surprising, why didn't they get fired, that I'm shocked about. There's tons of those. Yeah. Tons of people that I'm surprised. Go ahead.
Didn't get fired. No. I want you to tell me who you're surprised didn't get let go.
A lot more NXT people. Okay. I would say a lot more NXT people. A lot more of the... Let me just look at the roster, because I was looking at this the other day. WWE. Mm. Let's see.
Because they're definitely like utilizing their younger guys at this point for these
TV
tapings.
Yes, they
are.
Yeah. Let's see. WWE roster. Let's see here. I'm just going to... Sports Illustrated has this, which is so bizarre. Let's see. Shelton Benjamin. Okay. Shelton not getting let go. Jinder not getting let go. Mojo. I mean, Mojo was saved by Gronk, I guess. But Mojo would be one. The Iconics, maybe another one.
Ooh, interesting. Okay.
Right? That's another one that I'm surprised. Lucha House Party guys. Those guys, I'm surprised. If you're just looking at people that aren't being utilized. Chad Gable, I'm surprised. Right? That's another name. Like Bo Dallas, another name. Lars Sullivan, guys. Lars.
Yeah.
Why would you not let him go?
That's a good number one right there.
He's coming back.
That is true. Very, very odd, too. Very odd situations in wrestling right now. You want to do another question?
Let's do it.
Do you think Kenny Omega, this is from Brian, thank you for the $5. Do you think Kenny Omega should have given so much offense to an unsigned wrestler on this week's Dynamite? I mean, you can't have a squash. This is my personal feeling on this, because I saw this making the rounds also. Like, you can't have Kenny keep doing squash matches at the state of his career right now, because we all know how good he is, but I think he really wants to elevate the younger talent, and this was a good indication of doing that, you know. And plus, this guy was trained at the Nightmare Factory, so he's kind of like one of their homegrown guys, right?
Yeah, I think it depends, right? That question is depending on what you plan on doing with that guy. So do you have him? Is that guy going to be signed, and do they have an idea for him that could come down later down the road? I don't.
Right.
If not, then I don't agree that he should have had so much offense. I think Kenny needs to be booked as the man, and the only way to do that is by making you look really strong. I think these guys are not selfish, and that is going to bite them in the ass eventually.
You think so? You think they need to be more like old school Carney style with how they're booking and their and how they work?
Yeah, like I'll give an example: Flair having a squash match. Right, what Flair would do is you would start off you get like 2 minutes of offense, and that was it. Or a minute of offense. And if Flair would cut you off and just cheat and beat you and embarrass you. And that's how a Flair match went. So I don't know. I don't think these guys need to not put other people over at this point. I think, especially for Kenny Omega being the man, I honestly believe if he was in WWE today and there was no AEW, he'd be booked way better than he's being booked right now. I think I think Kenny Omega would have been a WWE champion by now. If he had signed with them. Yeah. Last January, he would have been a WWE champion.
That's interesting. I disagree with that. I feel like they would have tossed him onto the garbage pile. He would have been eating dog.
They
would have been eating
AJ.
Dog food with Baron Corbin.
They didn't with AJ though. AJ got that a great push.
Which WWE superstar would you like to see star in The Bachelor, but has to be in character the entire time?
Oh man. That's so easy right now. Undertaker? Kane. Okay, that's a good one. I didn't even think of that. I was thinking more like
Kamala.
Oh my god, Kamala on The Bachelor. No, I was thinking what's his name? Otis.
Oh, that'd be great.
Otis would be good. That's a good question.
Nakamura
on The Bachelor.
What do you think AEW does with Hangman and the Bucks when the crowds come back? Both will probably be too hot to turn at that point. That's a good point.
Hangman, the plan was to turn him, and because he got so over with this new thing, They decided not to. I think the natural thing would be for the Bucks to turn heel.
Right.
Right? That would be the natural thing, and to keep Kenny as a babyface and the Bucks to turn heel, but they need to keep the balance between the heels and babyfaces right now on the top level. I don't know. I think they're going to have to split the take them away from those guys for a little bit and have them just get over without having to flip the other guys.
I agree with that. Let's see. Is Carol Baskin really Enchante's mother?
Yes.
That bitch Carol Baskin.
Bad Carol Baskin.
That's it for questions right now, unless you have one on your end.
What did you think of the Triple H segment yesterday?
I thought it was funny. I have mixed feelings about it. Like, one, I always liked Triple H. I thought it was fun to see him goof around with Shawn Michaels and Vince McMahon. That's great. They turned the lights off on him. Awesome. Also, I feel like it's not the best timing where the company was like, yo, we just fired a shit ton of people. By the way, let's celebrate Triple H.
Yeah. I watched it and I was like, okay, I get what they're doing, right? I get it. And then Vince came out. I did not understand a word Vince was saying. Now, I was stoned at that point. I had taken an edible, and I thought it was me. I was like, maybe I'm just a little stoned, and he's like a little, you know, he's not making a lot of sense. He made no sense when I watched it again. I did not get that whole, I did not get any of it. I was very confused by Vince. He didn't really make a lot of sense. what did you make of it?
I thought it was just like a dopey fun way to kind of end the show, but it was also like a little, like, it was weird, right?
It was very weird. It was very weird.
Like, Vince needs the crowd, right?
Vince was very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Vince definitely needed the crowd. I didn't understand a word he said. Also, let's talk about that corporate ladder match at Money in the Bank.
Yeah. Okay. Weird.
I was explaining it to my wife, and she's like, so they're going to destroy the building? I'm like, yep, they're destroying the building. That's right. What it's going to, they're going to start from the ground floor and go up. Listen, it's very unique. I actually applaud them for this idea. It's a very different idea. It's out of the box thinking. I'm drawn into it, right? I think way more than a regular ladder match in the Performance Center. What do you make 100%. Of that?
I want to see as much wacky shit as possible in wrestling right now, you know, because like you really have to work with what you have. And if this is what they're doing, I'm okay with that. You know,
I don't think we're ever going to go back to not having these mini movies in wrestling.
Okay.
I think one, listen, it's not even on the grand scheme of things. There's no positivity that came out of this, but if you're talking about pro wrestling, right? The one positive thing that that came out of this is that they discovered that it works when you have pre-produced movie level wrestling matches, you know.
Absolutely.
And the whole point is that it is a little hokey. And a great example of this is the difference between the Randy Orton and Edge match that was like 30 something minutes, that was a pro wrestling brawl, versus the Undertaker and AJ Styles in a highly produced 30 minute brawl.
Right.
Right. That's the difference. I think we're going to have more of these going forward. Even when the crowds come back, you could do a lot of smoke and mirrors, and it works for guys like The Undertaker. This ladder match is going to be very different. It's not going to be produced like a movie. I'm not suggesting that, but it's a very out of the box thinking wrestling match that we have not seen. And we're going to get more of these. I'm excited too. I'm very excited for that, and I think that that's a positive here. You're gonna have matches like The Undertaker could do another 10 years of these kind of matches.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine 10 more
like
years
a 75-year-old Undertaker?
Like a 60-year-old Undertaker sure. having this match. Why can't you do that? Why? It's all smoke and mirrors. It's all spookiness.
Well, also if you look at the Bray Wyatt John Cena match, also like there was barely any wrestling in it. That was all psychology, right?
And I loved it. And people hated it. I know a lot of people hated it, but I absolutely loved that match. I thought it was 1,000 times better than any match those two could have had.
Absolutely.
At that moment, in the climate that we're in.
Plus, also, like, when you think about it, like, when you think about wrestling as a whole, it's moments as opposed to actual, like, moves, right? So when you think of Rock Hogan from WrestleMania 18, you automatically think of just them not even locking up, but looking at the crowd, right? And how hot that crowd was, right? Like, when I think of, like, CM Punk, John Cena in Chicago, I think of the crowd reaction that Punk got, you know? Like, it's moments as opposed to, like, oh, this guy hit, like, this move on so-and-so. I mean, like, sometimes that stuff is awesome, you know? Like, the, again, like, another specific moment, Shawn Michaels saying, I'm sorry, I love you, to Ric Flair.
Such a memorable moment.
One move, and that was it. I think they can keep creating stuff like that, just like that John Cena Bray Wyatt match, and have it mean something. The AJ Styles Undertaker match, another good example. The Ciampa Gargano match, just because it was shot so differently, made it more special.
Dude, that match, I thought it was a little long, but it worked. Well done.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, very different. You got to think out of the box at the end of the day. I think that's what it is, and that's what we're learning about pro wrestling, is that we've kind of confined ourselves to this format that WWE does things, and the fact that they're thinking a little bit differently, really, it works. There was an interview with Triple H, and he was talking about how Vince is like, we're going to have a Boneyard match, and he's like, I have no idea what the hell that is. Just make it good. I don't care what you do. Make this work.
Bone Zone match.
Bone Zone. Any other questions here?
Let's see. Do you think they should reenact the Attitude Era commercial during the match?
Dude, that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
That'd be fun.
Why not? What are the odds someone gets tossed off the roof?
You know, like the Giant falling off the roof with Hogan and then coming back at the end of the day? Yeah, it's possible. It's very possible. You know what I was thinking, though? What if they had, you know, they're doing that corporate ladder thing, right? And in every room, it was like a past wrestler. Like every room has like a different theme. So like you go in one room and it's the Boogeyman. Yeah, Mick Foley in a room.
Like the boiler room?
Yeah, like he's in a boiler room. Like you do something like that.
Wouldn't you want to see one last Mankind match in like a cinematic wrestling universe? Right.
Dude, you could. You could do that. You could do a 10-minute cinematic. Exactly. In a boiler room.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Classic Kane, you can bring back. You can bring back. You do something with Papa Shango. You know, Papa
everybody.
The guys who are still alive who had like the gimmicks, right?
Yeah. Bob Rowe with a question. How many people are watching Dark Side of the Ring? Do you like it? I actually do like it. I don't know what the numbers are, but they're actually pretty good from what I heard. I had the number. I can't remember what it was, but it's not in the millions, but it's doing well, especially for Vice. Mm-hmm. I watched the Dino Bravo one yesterday. Did you see it?
I did. That was interesting because I always like that. That was one that always fascinated me, right?
That they killed him. That the mafia killed him.
Right. Because you have like for a lot of wrestling stuff, like we've talked about this over the last couple of weeks. It's like the conspiracy around all this stuff, and something like Dark Side of the Ring comes out and it kind of like addresses like what fans want to talk about, you know, like the Jimmy Snuka one. Good example. And this one with Dino Bravo stuff, very good example too, because I remember like reading that he was selling illegal like cigarettes illegally,
yeah,
and kind of like grifting money. And then they kind of said that on the Dark Side of the Ring episode too. Very fascinating stuff.
Yeah, it was very fascinating. I think the Dino Bravo one, the most fascinating, like I knew the story, but the fascinating thing is, you know, how much WWE destroyed the territories. Like Montreal, that was a great story because Montreal was a very big territory and it was a very successful territory, and WWE was able to kind of go in there and kind of take it over with working with the promoters. The Jimmy Snuka one was, I got to watch it again because I wasn't really paying attention if there was any new revelations in it, but the story about how it wasn't looked into was interesting to me.
Right.
The fact that it just, okay, she fell and hurt her head, and it took 20, 30 years for them to kind of go into this because somebody started digging, and they said Vince, the story doesn't make...
Vince potentially showing up with a box full of money?
A box full of money, yeah, that's the best part. In Snuka's words, I mean, Snuka said it, but listen, he's a carny wrestler, who knows? It was good, but it wasn't. What else is left on here? We have the Owen Hart one. I think that'll be the finale.
I think Road Warriors also.
Is that this? Is that what else is left?
Yeah. I think Owen and Road Warriors, if I'm not mistaken, and maybe one more. I'm not 100% sure.
Let's see. There's right nine episodes. They wanted 10 episodes, but we got nine. So the first one was Chris Benoit. Second one was Chris Benoit. New Jack, I was not a fan of.
Oh, David Schultz.
Okay, David Schultz. Okay, David Schultz is... Okay, so we got, Jimmy Snuka, Assassination of Dino Bravo, David Schultz, and a slap heard around the world on John Stossel, and Cocaine and Cowboy Boots. Whose story is this?
Herb Abrams.
Oh, my God, Herb Abrams. That's crazy. Yeah. Guys, I hope they do a good job with that. But where's... Yeah. I thought Owen Hart was this season.
It's the last one, so there's four episodes left. It's David Schultz, Herb Abrams, Road Warriors, and then Owen Hart.
Okay, episode 9 is Owen Hart. Okay.
Yeah. So that's these all should be super interesting. The David Schultz one, I feel like that's going to be like really, really captivating.
Well, this, it's interesting because the David Schultz one, there's a lot of story. There are stories that was a work. That's what a lot of people think. But the biggest story here is that Vince put David Schultz up to it.
Okay.
The story is that he told Vince that Vince is like, no, protect the business. I'll take care of you. And when it happened, Vince kind of threw him under the bus.
Right.
So it is interesting. The Herb Abrams one, Herb was a promoter and he was nuts and he died in a hotel room, I think in Manhattan, covered in Vaseline and cocaine.
Right. That's insane. That's going to be a good one. Also, I wonder what they're going to talk about with the Road Warriors, just like how insane they were.
Yeah. Here's another great question, Bob Rowe. What are the chances that Tom Brady and Gronk participate in WrestleMania in 2021 in Tampa?
Ugh.
So that's, by the way, I think that's a major possibility, and he actually stumbled on something. Mm-hmm. There's a good chance that WrestleMania is going to Tampa next year, and they're just moving everything up by a year.
Uh-huh.
So that's something to think about here.
Stupid Gronk.
Gronk, man, he's with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I didn't know that he had 1 year left on his NFL contract.
Yeah.
Like 10 million, right? So now, like, what is he going to do? Is he going to show up to training with the 24/7 championship?
I guess so. I guess he could do whatever the hell he wants. Everybody's desperate. He may be the Mongo McMichaels of this generation.
100%. I agree with that.
Mongo, one of the worst wrestlers ever. By the way, you want to talk about mid-card talent that I loved? Mongo. Loved him in WCW.
You were a big Mongo guy.
I was a big Mongo guy. Weird. Mm-hmm. Really weird that there was no idea why I liked Mongo. I was into Mongo. Just
bizarre.
Thinking about it. Who else in WCW? Was there anybody in WCW that you were into? Like a weird mid-carder? Pre-luchadors.
Nobody.
Maybe
Pillman or Chris Adams.
Okay, Pillman. Yeah, Brian Pillman. Chris Adams.
But pre-Luchadors, nobody. When the Luchadors showed up, everybody. Forget it.
Got Psychosis. Another one. Got another one. Flash Funk. Okay. What did you think of him?
Oh, Flash Funk was awesome.
Flash Funk. That's another one. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? And we're wrapping it up. 10 p.m. Tuesday, David Schultz episode.
Awesome.
Very interested in that. There's a great clip from Tuesday Night Titans where Vince and Vince is at David Schultz's house, right?
Really?
And David Schultz has a bunch of guns. And Vince is like, get away from me with that thing. He's like, what do you think? I'm going to shoot this thing? And David Schultz discharges the gun by mistake. And Vince loses it. And he goes, what are you, an idiot? You idiot, you big dummy. And David Schultz gives him a look. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay, pal. Great clip. If you could find this thing, it's Vince loses his mind. And this is pre-Vince, becoming a character. This is pre-Mr. McMahon, but he turns into Mr. McMahon so quickly. I'd never seen that. Mm-hmm. That's a great pick. All right, guys. I think that's it, right? We're done?
We're done. 90 minutes today. Very nice.
Nice. Thank you, guys. We'll see you all next week. See you next time. Bye.